your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Mid, everybody, and thank you for joining me tonight. It's going to be a very interesting show. My guest is legendary ghost hunter Richard Sennett. Now, Richard Sennett is an internationally known and well-respected researcher of the paranormal. He's a prolific author and teacher. He's been ghost hunting since 1978, and he's appeared on tons of TV shows. And he's also, you know, as an author, he has many, many books, but one of his books is called Ghost Dogs of California, and he's contemplating doing a book on ghost animals in general. And Richard is such a great storyteller that I thought I'd love to hear some of his animal ghost stories, and he said yes. So welcome, Richard. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, as always.
Ah, that's good. Well, I've got a couple of questions that might entail a story or two, but in the meantime, we are going to be telling stories all night. But when did you first encounter an animal spirit?
Well, the first animal spirit I saw was right after I'd gotten married. I had we had moved into this old house. We were very, you know, as all young couples, we didn't have a lot of money, so we got this old, dilapidated house, which is gone now. Was torn down, and I was there, and we would hear a dog walking around on the hardwood floors. The house had been built about 1914. You know how those hardwood floors are? You hear the dog's nails, but we didn't have a dog. We didn't have anything that might account for that kind of sound, but I heard it, and then my son, I had, you know, he was from my wife's first marriage. He said he had seen a ghost doggy. Thought, boy, that's kind of odd. And then my wife said she saw it as well. And I didn't know if I should believe them or not. I mean, he was only like 3 and a half at that time. And so I thought maybe it was just imagination. Then I got out of the shower. I was all by myself, alone. My wife was visiting her parents and taking our son and with her, and I got out of the shower and I looked down the hall and I saw a dog looking at me. And I thought, boy, that's odd. And I thought, well, the door was open, a stray has wandered in, you know. And I ran down naked to see if I could close the door or what have you. There was nothing there. And that was the first time I saw it. Now I saw it over and over again. But it was the third time that really freaked me out, because it was then, because I had just seen the head and forepaws, like looking around a corner or through a door. Then I saw it was only a head and forepaws. There was nothing behind it. In the middle of the dog, it was gone. And my wife saw that as well. As the weeks went by, we were at that old house. A lot of weird things happened in that place. And then finally, when I wasn't there, my wife told me about it. She was cleaning up, and this young man came to the door, kind of a hippie fellow, and he came in and said he had lived there. And he asked to see if any mail had been delivered to him accidentally before he moved or all that. And then she asked him, did you have a dog? And he got really sad. He said he had a dog, but when he was moving, the animal got out and was run over by a truck. And the back part of the animal was crushed. That's why we only saw half of the dog.
There you go. That makes sense. Wow.
And so that was an interesting story. But interestingly enough, after that young man came, we never saw it again. It's like it was waiting for him.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Maybe he followed him home.
Yeah, which I think animals continue their loyalty, their love beyond the grave.
Oh, they do, absolutely. I mean, I have had some experiences, but the weirdest one was when my big Maine Coon cat died, and about 6 months later, I was sitting in my office, and I had a couch in there, and I happened to see something out of the corner of my eye. Well, it wasn't, and it was moving, but it wasn't a cat, exactly. It was the size of a baseball, and it had fur, same color that my cat had, long hair, gray. So apparently, he didn't know how to manifest himself completely, but there was this ball just moving right down the sofa for a minute, and then it disappeared. But I think, yeah, it just reminded me when you said that the dog was half a dog, but all it was this big fur ball. And yeah, it was kind of interesting. But I've heard that some people in spirit have trouble showing themselves after they're gone, you know, to people on the earth plane, and maybe, you know, they only show their head or something like that. So maybe you just kind of practice makes perfect if you want to show yourself to the living.
I believe there's a lot of truth to that, and that accounts for people, ghostly sightings of headless people. You know, they're not all in France being decapitated or something. But I think it has to do with the way we perceive them. Many people, when I interview them about a ghost sighting, they are at cannot mention anything below the waist. I ask, what kind of shoes was the apparition wearing? They don't know. They just don't see them beyond that point. So I have a feeling it's not so much the fact that they were, you know, decapitated or something like that. It's how they are manifest to us. They are imperfectly manifest. That's all.
Yeah, it takes practice from what I gather. And, you know, if you're not good, you're going to come back piecemeal, I think, which is a little bit scary. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I would hate to just see this hand waving at me without, you know, being attached to anything, but it could happen.
Well, I've gotten stories of people carrying just a hand carrying a lit candle.
Oh, geez.
And no body, no arm. It's pretty freaky.
That would be. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when I was looking for a picture for your banner, I came across a picture of a ghostly dog amongst your Facebook photos. Is there a good story or any story behind the picture?
No, I just lifted that off the internet, but it was very similar to a story that I had researched at that time. And I didn't have a photograph, and so I use that one, but it was the same description as what I had gotten. And it's about a dog at the hotel up in St. George Hotel in the town of Volcano, where they had seen a dog at this hotel, a ghost dog. And they even have a name for that one. Most of our ghost dogs that I collected stories on, they don't have names. They're just, we saw this big dark dog with red burning eyes, but we don't know the name. This one they called Old Soldier. And he was linked to a tragedy that happened there during the Civil War. It was a detachment of Union troops that were marching in the middle of winter from one town to another to help put down suspected rebels in the Gold Rush country. And mm-hmm. they got caught in a snowstorm, and they had a dog whom they called Old Soldier. And they froze to death. The entire unit, this little detachment, all froze. But the dog kept running, maybe to get help. Mm-hmm. And he got to the town and was, you know, overcome by the cold, and they found his frozen body the next morning.
Oh.
But he's still there. He's still, mm-hmm. I guess, trying to get help for his for the men who had adopted him as their mascot.
They're with all animals, well, most of them, their loyalty goes way above and beyond anything that we can think of, seriously.
Remarkably, we find that story with cats, too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think of cats as really that loyal a creature. But over and over, I'm getting stories of cats who do seemingly, after death, follow their masters into the next world. And I got a unique story from the mission San Fernando down in Mission Hills.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the early California missions, and one of the early buildings still stands there. It's called the Convento. It's a big, long building with a big archway in the front. It's very beautiful. It's this original structure. But lots of missions seem to attract cats. And mm-hmm. there was, in the 1950s, this elderly woman who lived in an apartment not too far away, and she would come and feed the cats and clean up after them, and, you know, sweep and do that. And the Padres let her do it because, well, you know, she kept the place clean and it made her happy and all that. Now, the local kids, you know, as children will be, called her the crazy cat woman. And wherever she appeared, all these cats would almost magically appear around her. And, of course, she fed them and talked to them and all that. And but unfortunately, you know, age being what it is, eventually she passed on to her reward and was no longer there to take care of the cats. But she does. She comes back as a ghost, and around her are phantom cats. And they say they see these misty figures, and they have eyes that glow like stars. And I've got one story from a man who was walking his German Shepherd dog, and they saw the old woman shuffling along in her house coat surrounded by the cats. And so he grabbed his dog, thinking the dog would, you know, charge forward, but the dog didn't. And as they drew near, the dog started to cringe and put his tail between his legs and back away, whimpering from the cats who were approaching. And that's not the only time the cat woman and her feline phantoms have been encountered at that old mission.
I was thinking when you said that cats, you know, get attracted to missions, I was thinking that maybe they were happy there because they were going to kill mice and stuff back then. You know, they were.
They were there for originally, but they seem to be continuing on with their duties. I've gotten a bunch of weird stories about cats who are alive today at the missions, not something from the past. The weirdest story is that one of my favorite missions, San Antonio de Padua, up near King City, which is where I saw my first ghost while I was doing an archaeological dig. But they have a lot of cats, so they always have people drop them off there or try to find them homes. This one parishioner at the mission, still an active church, brought a cardboard box with kittens. And after Mass, he gave them away. But one kitten was solid black, and nobody wanted it because, you know, it's bad luck. It's a black cat. And so he stayed there, and the Padres, you know, fed him, and there were other cats there as well. But this cat was different. He would go into the church on Sunday and listen to the Mass being sang. And finally, one day, he was a grown black cat, very beautiful. And They were having a funeral. A young man had been killed in a tragic automobile accident. A young man full of promise, everything. His mother was weeping in front of the in the front pew, and they were doing the funeral mass. The casket was there. It was very sad. The cat came, and in the middle of the mass, he ran right past the casket, past the padre, past everything. He went back into the sacristy. And then a few minutes later, the cat came back dragging a rosary with its mouth, dragged it up and jumped up into the lap of the mother, the weeping mother, and presented her with the rosary and comforted her at that hour of need. And wow. So from that day on, the cat's been named Rosario.
That's great. Yeah. That makes good sense. But
and see, that's only one of many. That's not like from the days of the Padres. This is like happening, I think it happened in 2007. Recent. We have another one even more recently, a cat named Sola, which is attached to Mission San Juan Batista. And this is another living cat. And he would go in. Now, they've always had cats, but this guy would actually attend the mass. And during the mass, he would go and seek someone out to sit on their lap and actually be petted by the parishioner. But they noticed he only selected people who needed something, who were grieving over a loss or something like that. And they started to rumor that maybe the cat was an agent of St. Francis. He was there to do an angelic mission. And finally, there was a guy, a Vic Burley guy, worked as a gardener, I believe, professional gardener. And the cat came and sat in his lap, and this reduced the man to tears. And then later he confessed that in his troubled childhood, which he was beaten and had a lot of problems, he took out his inner rage on little animals. Torturing and killing them. And now that he grew up, he felt so guilty that he had done these awful things. And he tried to pray about it. And when the cat jumped on him, it he took it as a sign that, that God had forgiven him for the things he had done before. Now, later the cat got cancer, and the parishioners all put up money to have an operation. And though the cat no longer has ears because they had to be cut off because of the treatments, he was a prized animal that the mission parish has, and he still attends mass, even in his earless state. And one of the parishioners wrote a book about him called Sola, the Cat of Mission San Juan Batista. So it's kind of interesting how these things go. Now, I'm sure that when he passes away, if he hasn't already, this was a few years back, he may well turn out to be a ghost.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many sightings. People see ghost animals of all kinds, you know. And I've got something in here, and I don't know if it's a cat or a dog, but I'll be sitting here at my desk and working on the computer, and I feel something rub up against my leg, and I turn around and I look for my cat, T, and he's always not the one that's doing it. You know, he's on the bed or he's somewhere else, you know, but I don't know if it's a dog or a cat, but it's got the nicest fur. It feels long and silky. I don't know what it is. I tell him hello, you know, day long you want, you know, but it happens a lot. And I jump every time because I, you know, you're just not used to getting rubbed. It's probably a cat because I don't think a dog would kind of like rub up like a cat, but having a clue, but it's nice. I mean, it's comforting when you see these things or you feel these things. And I think, you know, a couple of people in the chat room have mentioned that they still see their animals, you know, either see or feel the animals still being there after a long time, both dogs and cats. So, yeah, it's not, I don't know, some people say, well, animals can't do that. They don't have a soul, you know. And every time I hear that, every time I hear that, I want to raise my wand, you know. say, come on, that's not true. They do too. Every living thing has a soul. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that like humans, they don't have to stick around every minute of every day. That, you know, they can go anywhere they want and do whatever they want when they cross. But I think, you know, a lot of people have said in the past that when they needed comforting, they would show up. You know, they know what we're up to.
So, very true, very true.
Has anybody, this is a really stupid question that just came into my head, but, you know, we were talking about, you were thinking about doing a book on ghost animals in general, and cats and dogs, and I think horses, you know, those kind of animals are pretty common. But yeah. I wonder if anybody's ever talked about seeing like a pet hamster or you know, a snake or some kind of, you know, any other kind of animal in spirit other than the common ones. What think?
Yeah, the common pets like dogs and cats. No, the people have seen all animals as phantoms. But perhaps John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist Church, back in olden times in England, as a boy, he wrote about their house being haunted by a glowing bunny rabbit.
Oh.
That would run around the room and cause poltergeist-like activities. So, I mean, this is the founder of modern Methodism, was an educated man. So others have had encounters with pets, but I think it's the ones that we're linked to, like horses, like dogs and cats. I have not heard any accounts of pigs being coming back as ghosts or as bears. Well, actually, that's not true. There's a couple of bear sightings I have heard about. But it's an interesting endeavor. I'd like to learn more about it. But this ghost book I wrote has really taken a lot of time. And remarkably, if you want to find ghost dogs, the place to go is England. They're just chock full of them.
Mm.
And remarkably, my book, which is Ghost Dogs of California, is selling really well in Great Britain, of all places. Why would they want to know about California? I have no idea. But lots of stories. In fact, some of you know about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and the Hound of the Baskervilles. What most people don't know is the story was based on a real ghost dog sighting in the Midlands of England.
Mm-hmm.
So these accounts happen, and they date back a long way. And many of the stories I've collected in California are very similar to what people talk about in old England. So they guard treasures, they threaten people, and there's also a subcategory of ghost dogs called hellhounds.
Yes, uh-huh.
And hellhounds are kind of fun, too. And they're kind of like the dog version of Bigfoot. You know, yep. People see them and then they don't see them. There's even a rumor, there's no evidence of this, but it's a rumor that wherever you see Bigfoot around, you'll usually see hellhounds. One story I read is that Bigfoot has hypnotically and telepathically domesticated the hellhounds to do his bidding.
Ooh.
Which, I don't know, it's kind of fun. If you're Bigfoot and you're really lonely and stuff
yeah.
like that, maybe having a dog wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, and, I think so.
And so it's, and they, of course, do his bidding and scare off Bigfoot hunters and stuff like that, and find game for him and help write down, stuff like that. But anyway, that's one account we have. But I've gotten all kinds of stories of hellhounds, which you can always tell because they like, their eyes glow like burning fire, they're huge, they're gigantic, and they're usually omens of death. Mm-hmm. Or something really negative. So encountering one of these guys is a means you've got something bad about to happen. There's one up near Miter's Oaks. That's that little town near Ojai, California. And it's just a little tiny community. And it has right down the middle of the street, their main drag is called El Roblar. And the dog haunts that street, so it's called the El Roblar Hound. And people talk about it going down. But if you see it, something bad is going to happen. One fellow said that he saw the dog coming in from Oxnard, where he works, and he was coming home late and saw the animal in the middle of the road. And so he stopped and moved off to one side, and he got this cold chill. And he knew this was supernatural, not a real dog, but something paranormal. And when he got home, the phone rang, and his beloved grandmother had passed away at that very same moment. So, as a matter of fact, my very first ghost hunt was seeking out a ghost dog. This is when I was growing up in Thousand Oaks. And this is when they actually had a thousand oaks there. In fact, I think there were more oak trees than people at that point in time. It hadn't grown up. There were no housing tracts or anything. A lot of farmland and Hollywood filming went on there.
Yeah.
And we were living there. My dad worked at Jungle Land, of all places. So it was a strange way to grow up, really. I got to get really friendly with elephants and snakes and
I loved Jungle
wild
Land.
Animals.
Yeah,
it was kind of, it was unique in its own way.
Yeah.
Good, bad, or different. You got to give it that. It was unique. And while I was going to school, this rumor at Caneo School was that there was the Black Dog of Death. And if you saw the Black Dog, you only had 1 month to live. And it was kind of a fun story. Here I was about in the seventh or eighth grade, and it was an 8-4 school, so didn't have junior high school back then. And so we used to go to the younger grades, the first and second graders, and say, "Look over there, I see it, the black dog. Can you see it? Look at it." And they, of course, would all hide their eyes. They didn't want to see it. I would do that for fun. I got into big trouble over it. But it gave me a cause. I started to ask around about the dog. There was a poor kid who died of leukemia, and the story was in the schoolyard that he had seen the black dog. You know, that's why he died. And then we got to, where did it start? And it was a cemetery there, an old pioneer cemetery that looked like something out of Western Boot Hill. And that's where the dog always appeared at 8:47 at night. Now, for some reason, why not midnight? No, it's 8:47. And so I resolved to take a picture of the ghost dog. So it's my first ghost hunt. So my friend Colin and I told our parents we were staying at each other's houses, and instead brought our sleeping bags to the cemetery, which was all covered with weeds and abandoned, so we could hide there pretty much. No one would even see us from the road. And we got in the long grass and made a nice nest. We brought soda pop and snacks and a camera and a radio. And we just waited there telling stories. We also figured, well, if we see the black dog, maybe we'll only have a month to live. What will you do in your last month? You know, we had fun. None of us believed it, of course. And then, wouldn't you know it, the time got closer and closer. We got more and more excited. And finally, at 11:47, we heard something in the grass moving around. I'll have to admit, I almost lost it. I had my flashlight out, you know. And then I flashed it over to this big tombstone where the ghost dog was set to appear. And I saw two glowing eyes looking back in the light, reflecting the light of the flashlight. And I just about had it at that point. And then it started to come closer. I could see it was a gigantic jackrabbit, about a foot and a half tall, maybe 2 feet tall, big thing. And it was looking at us, scared of us as much as we were of it. And it just took off like jackrabbits are known to do. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Conejo was full of the things.
Yeah.
Not now, but it used to be. Mm-hmm. But my friend didn't take the picture. He was laughing so hard about that. But that was my first ghost encounter was not a black dog of death or any black dog at all. In fact, it was nothing more than a large jackrabbit.
I love it.
It started out my career, I guess, as a ghost hunter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and mm-hmm. I've got some more questions about some maybe famous doggies in California. And you've got some more stories, so everybody sit tight, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle Deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad, and now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at www.marlabrooks.com, and you can purchase the deck from schifferbooks.com, amazon.com, or order a copy from your favorite bookseller.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And I'm here with my guest, Richard Sennett, and we are talking about animal spirits and his book, Ghost Dogs of California. And that made me think about, oh God, I forgot the name of the cemetery, Richard. Where is that big animal cemetery in L.A.?
Yeah, that's in Calabasas.
There you go. And there's a couple of really famous dogs there. Like Rudolph Valentino's, right?
Oh, K-Bar is perhaps one of the best known and one of the early internments there. But it's really a crazy place. If you haven't gone to the Pet Cemetery in Calabasas, do go there. It is such a fun place. And they've got all the dogs. It's kind of weird, too, because they have the dogs divided up by religion. So you have Jewish dogs and Catholic dogs and stuff like that. As if that really matters, right, to an animal.
That's
And they decorate the little graves for Christmas. It's really quite an interesting place. And they have, I think it was one of the horse that the Jay Silverheels rode is buried there, Scout, as well as a number of other famous pets. But, of course, K-Bar is the one who comes back as a ghost. Mm-hmm. And if you visit his grave, so they say, and you're psychic, you might actually be able to communicate with him. But I think a lot of it has to do with the hysteria of his death. When he died at the age of 30, it was very dramatic. He almost died, and then seemed to be getting better, and then the country was kind of kept on tenterhooks until he finally did pass away. And It was a traumatic event, and a lot of people did seances, tried to contact him. In fact, many claimed to have gotten messages from him, and at one of the seances, the medium said she was being licked by K-Bar. Now, K-Bar was a big dog, mm-hmm. and he owned a lot of dogs, but this was his special dog. And he always, in fact, K-Bar was the only dog he ever allowed in his bedroom and slept with him. And all of his girlfriends, which he had quite a number after the divorce with his second wife, who, you know, just bolted on him pretty much. Mm-hmm. He had kind of a string of girlfriends. Pretty much, if you wanted to be his girlfriend, you had to make friends with K-Bar. Mm-hmm. So the dog was very important to the whole thing. So he was a very famous animal. And he died 4 years after Valentino passed away. And it's said by an actress that she was driving past his house when the very same moment he died, the dog let out such a cry that she actually almost went off the road on the little mountain road near his Bel Air home.
Yeah.
So that dog became very known to spiritualist lore and became quite famous. And people claim to continue to see him just as they continue to see Valentino down in Hollywood. And I wouldn't be surprised if someday in the future the two will be united in spirit form walking through downtown Hollywood.
They could be. You know, I mean, that's comforting to a lot of people when they talk about their pets, their dogs or cats or fur babies going first. And, you know, they say, I hope I get to see them on the other side. And people always say they'll be waiting there for you. And that's pretty comforting, you know, very comforting. Unless you had some kind of a dog. Yeah.
I was saying that the actor Lon Chaney Jr., who's best known for playing the Wolfman, as well as a number of other Universal monsters from Frankenstein to Dracula, he's been seen at Leo Carrillo Beach walking his large German shepherd named Moose.
Wow.
So people have seen him. And Greta Garbo has been seen at a resort near San Diego walking her dog she had. So people tend to be seen walking their animals, doing something I imagine was very pleasant for them in life, reenacting that joy, whatever it is, after.
Do you think that those are real-time spirits doing that, or is that kind of like those anniversary ghosts that you see that just show up every so often and they're not really, you can't talk to them, you can't, you know, it's just like a movie going over and over again.
Yeah, after images, one term they use. I think some of them are, but most of the ghost animals I've encountered seem to react to the living.
Mm-hmm.
And so they appear to be what I call a true haunt.
Yeah.
That they are an independent entity rather than a psychometric image somehow impressed in the environment. It's just playing back. You're getting a glimpse of the past rather than actually a spirit form, which is in some way interacting with you. So,
yeah.
No, there's just so many different stories that you just can't discount them.
Mm-hmm. No, you know, I mean, years ago, people discounted ghosts in general. You know, it was all boogity boogity, or, you know, because you were very religious and that just didn't happen. You know, your spirit went up to heaven and they're staying there because it's a better place, you know, kind of thing. But I think more and more people are seeing animal spirits now and believing that, you know, they are, and not thinking they're crazy to see it. I mean, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have told anybody I had a cat under my desk that rubbed my leg. Nope. I mean, you know, of course, 20 years ago, I didn't admit to being a witch either. But that's, you know, times change and things are better. And
yeah,
but now, you know, it's second nature to somebody that says, oh, you know, I heard my bird, you know, that whistled all the time, that passed away. I heard his whistle because he did a specific song. I know my bird did that a couple of times because he used to do the Andy Griffith theme. He loved listening to that and whistling to that. And I heard it several times after he was gone, you know, because he wasn't quite on key. So it wasn't like I was hearing it off the TV or somebody's radio, but he tried really hard. I interviewed Bill Marks one time, who was Harpo's oldest son. And mm-hmm. when I went to the house to do the interview, he was telling me about his bird, his cockatiel, that got out of the cage. And they were hoping that he would come back. You know, he got out of the cage, he flew out of the house, and they were really worried about him. And he said the thing that he would know that it was his bird was the bird would sing or whistle, "Hooray for Captain Spaulding."
Huh.
And so, you know, he says they're out there and they're all whistling Captain Spaulding, trying to get him back. I don't know if he came back or not, but it was pretty funny. And I'm sure, you know, if the bird passed, he would hear Captain Spaulding as well.
It's very amazing. In fact, at where I worked at the old Levos Adobe for many years, that was donated to us a Victorian bird cage. Mm-hmm. And so one of our volunteers stuck a phony bird in it. It was from a lady's hat, you know, from an antique hat, put it in there on the perch, and we put it in as a prop in the children's room. And people say right after that they would hear the bird singing. Mm-hmm. It was a stuffed bird. It's just a bird there. And so as an experiment, because I'm always interested in the paranormal, I put a tape recorder in the bird cage and I let it play. And I actually got a tape recording of bird songs, and like mm-hmm. a songbird. Well, mm-hmm. I showed it to people. I said, oh, well, all it is you've got it next to the window, and you're just hearing real birds in the environment that is bled through, and you're fooling yourself into thinking you've got ghost birds. So I said, okay, well, maybe they're right. So I got 3 tape recorders. I put them outside, one inside the cage and one outside the window and one at the other window to tape record any ambient sounds. Mm-hmm. And the ones outside, I got crows very distinctively making their sound, and then mm-hmm. I still got birds singing in the little bird cage. So I think there's something to some of the stuff of these things coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think, like, if an animal was mistreated or something, I don't think it would come back. But the mm-hmm. ones that were loved, like most of them are, and whatever, they do come back. And I sometimes, you know, I invite them to come back. You know, all mm-hmm. of a sudden I'll sit here and say, okay, so-and-so, you know, Callie and Pipsqueak, and all, come have a slumber party tonight. You know, let's all have a slumber party tonight. Now, I've never had proof that they came, but like, I think as with human spirits, if you talk to them and call their name, they do hear you. So
I think you're right.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, okay, let's have a slumber party. And you know, just because you don't want them to think that you've ever forgotten them either, you know. So I think if they all ended up here, I think T would have a fit. But, you know, he might not. He might like the company. But so,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
I was saying that it's just very common with the nature of our pets. We love them so much. They leave an impact on our hearts or our psychic souls as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in my collecting of ghost dog stories, I came across a couple of really weird things. Like, have you ever heard of the snake dog?
I'd like to hear about it, though.
Yeah, this lady was taking her son to work, to school. She had to go to work. And she was driving. This is in a little gold rush town up north. And right in the middle of the road, in the daylight, she saw what appeared to be a large dog. But instead of having a regular head, it had a snake-like head with a long neck. And again, eyes aglow with burning fire, like they all seem to have. And this weird snake dog. Well, at first you get this odd story. Now, she saw it, and another driver also saw it. And it ran away. What in the world was that, a dinosaur of some kind, or who knows what? I did some research, and oddly enough, in the stories of King Arthur from Old England, there's a description of a monster just like that, with a dog's body and a snake's head. But it gives us this, all these really weird things. Oh, in Watts, there were sightings back in the 70s of a dog that had a woman's head on it instead of a man's head or a dog's head. It had a woman's head. And it actually frightened a number of people. And at first, the police were called in, and they thought it was crazy, someone taking too much dope or something. But numerous people started to call in. And whatever it was, no one knows. It just sort of vanished off the face of the earth, leaving us with an enigma. And another ghostly animal of this kind is our monster friend, the chupacabra, which is a goat-sucking dog, kind of a vampire dog, actually. And there have been examples of the animal actually caught or shot, and they appear to be like coyotes or regular dogs that have a disease which causes their skin to become infected and their hair to fall out. And they create a very strange-looking creature. At least that's a theory behind the chupacabra, though others have different theories about it. But there are a lot of oddball stuff out there in the universe, and it's fun to look into it. And I'm very pleased I put in the time to do the research. It opened my eyes to a lot of different ways of looking at the supernatural world.
I'm like you. I love research because you learn from research. You know, some things are not believable, but you do. It's just so important to kind of expand your horizons and the possibilities of things around us. And, you know, I think that especially with our animal friends, our loved ones and stuff, it's always hopeful that they're there, that they will be there. They'll meet us. It's just because they're a family. You know, it's just like, you know, grandpa died. Well, somebody's going to say, oh, that you can't compare an animal to a dog. But no, I mean, they are family, and we want to know that they're well and fine. And we want to hear stories that they came back. And I've seen some things on YouTube that were kind of strange, but they actually looked like dogs walking. And the people are describing it, that saw them, and then they pulled out their camera and saw this shadow that was about the same size and the same color as the puppies that they lost. I mean, how do you disclaim that or claim it? But I kind of think that things like that happen a lot, more than
I was going to say, you're right. People have gotten evidence of such. I saw a ghost dog years ago at the mission La Purissima. And years later, I went into this wild room by myself and then saw this animal look very real, curled up in a corner. And it moved and it raised its head up. I could see it was a greyhound, and then it just vanished. I thought, boy, that's odd. I wrote it up as I do everything I encounter. And years later, a guy named Hernandez was up there at the La Purissima mission doing investigations, ghost hunting, and he was setting up a camera in this one area where they have the wine cellar, the entrance to the wine cellar. And just as, before they got the camera up, they're putting the tripod up, trying to get it ready to go, and they heard this gruff barking. And they looked around and saw nothing. Then they saw at the end of the hall this big dog, looked like a greyhound, and it started to growl and charge right at them. And it jumped in the air and leaped right for the leader of the team. In fact, it was so pronounced that he fell back and hit his head. Mm. And, of course, the dog didn't hit him because it just vanished. And then later, when they were reviewing the tapes that they had made earlier to that, they actually got what seemed to be a shadow form of a dog in one of the rooms. So it's something very curious is going on. Now, of course, you have to ask yourself, why would they be a dog in front of the wine cellar? Well, that's pretty obvious. To make mm-hmm. sure nobody helped themselves to a free bottle of wine.
He's guarding the stuff.
Yeah, he's guarding the stuff, and he's still on duty. He came and said, "Who are these guys?" And so he drove them off. But, of course, there's no more wine there for him to guard. But dogs do take on their duties, so much so that they continue on after death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the beauty of it. I mean, they're there. Whether we know it or not, I believe that they're there. Dogs, cats, you know, even mice maybe.
Perhaps. But,
yeah. I mean, why not? That makes sense. So what was the most, I don't know, it's hard to say because this is like asking you who your favorite children are. What was one of the most shocking accounts of an animal sighting that you've read or witnessed?
Well, I have witnessed, as I said, a few, but shocking ones are ones that really have changed people's minds. There's a place in Northern California called Mount Diablo. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes.
It's a mountain just north of east of Monterey and south of San Francisco.
Yeah,
it's a nice big mountain, and it's called Devil Mountain, but it was considered cursed. Even the Native Americans didn't like it. So it was like bad news. And during the mission times, there was a local group of the Native people who didn't want to join the mission and formed a group and started to raid the mission cattle and steal things from the missions, and they used Mount Diablo as their headquarters because everyone would go there. It made an ideal hideout. So they were going back down there, surging back down on their raids. Finally, the governor of California raised a little army, and they went and attacked the mountain and killed the chief in a battle that was fought there. Now, they brought with them one of the most fearful things they had. They were dogs, war dogs, large, mastiff-like critters. In fact, a lot of people believe that the conquest of Mexico was made possible by the presence of dogs as much as it was horses and firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these war dogs. The natives are kind of scared of them for good reason. And okay, that's what happened. That was history. It happened a long time ago. Mm-hmm. It's now a park. You could go there and hike. But people see these large dogs up there. And one of the most fearful stories I had is when I interviewed this couple. Or just when they were talking about it, their faces got all white. And the lady started to become very agitated. And she was saying, that was the biggest effing dog I ever saw in my life. and it was really compelling. They had seen something. They were hiking on the trail. And they saw this big dog, and it had a collar on it with spikes on it. And they thought it was some stray or some one of the other hikers had a dog and wasn't leashed like it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. They were kind of scared of it because it was so big. And then it started to bark and growl at them. And finally, it just disappeared, vanished on them. But that freaked them out so much that when I finally talked to them, they gave a great description of what they had seen. That was perhaps the most dramatic thing that I had seen. Many of the stories I got were very low wattage. Yes, I saw this thing. It was kind of scary, but that's gone. It's nothing really intimate. But this one was a little bit different. It seemed to have had a profound impact on this couple.
Wow. Yeah, well, we've got just a couple of minutes left, so I want you to let everybody know where they can find you and your books and stuff that's going on with you, all the good stuff.
Okay, you can. The best place to get my books, I have quite a number of them up, and the most recent one is The Ghost Dogs of California. It's on Amazon.com. I have an author's page, Richard Sennett. Do click on it and see all of my books and the reviews and stuff like that. I've gotten some pretty good reviews over the years. And so Amazon.com is the best place to buy them. To reach me, you can always, I have a Facebook page called Richard Sennett Ghost Hunter. So you can't go wrong clicking that in, my name and Ghost Hunter, you'll pop it up. You'll see everything is listed there. I also have another site, richardsennett.com, Richard Sennett, one word. Or if they want, you can email me. I get questions from all over the planet, getting people from, last one I got was from Hong Kong, and talking about ghosts and things of that nature. A lot of stuff coming out of Brazil. Brazil's doing some great paranormal research. In fact, if it wasn't for the language barrier, they would be far more. They would have a greater impact here on the United States. But Brazil's doing a lot of work. I get messages from them. And you can reach me at hainthunter.com. That's haint, H-A-I-N-T, Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R.com, AOL.com. So hainthunter@AOL.com. So if you have a question or you want to try to find out what I'm up to, yeah, I'll have it there, or I'll be on Facebook, or I always try to update my stuff.
You're easy to find, which is good, because there's a lot of people that still need you to fill in the blanks, I think. So again, thank you so much for being here, and please come back with more books, more stories. Love having you on. And I want to thank everybody for listening in. And you're always welcome, for sure. But thank you, everybody, for listening in as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.